David Cassidy is here. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
It's a delight to meet you.
Actually, a pleasure to meet you. I've heard so many dreadful things about you.
To be honest, can I say all of those are true, David?
Yeah, I bet they are.
No, they really are.
And Steve Wright prepared me for this. So I love Steve. Known him since he was just a tyke. Anyway.
He's been around a while.
He has. He's on holiday. If you're listening, Steve, I miss you, and I'm beginning to take it personally because the last two times I've done your show, you haven't been here. But I
do you think he's avoiding you?
I have a feeling there's something. I might have said something. I don't know.
Here's how you know you've got a proper star on the show.
Okay,
because yesterday, whenever I was coming in,
yeah,
someone stopped me and said, "Can you tell me when David Cassidy's coming in?" And I said, "He's not coming in until tomorrow." Mm. And they said, "Oh no, we know. They just turned up today to find out what time you were coming in tomorrow." That's how you know you've got proper fans.
I do have proper fans. And I'll tell you what, in this country, I've been blessed. I'll tell you, I mean this, and I hate to be honest and sincere. Let's not get cynical. I've got the most incredibly devoted, awesome fans. There were times when I didn't come here or tour here for 11 years. And then I didn't tour again until 2002.
That's a little bit of neglect.
I would say that your fans might take it personally, but it wasn't. I was doing lots of work in the U.S. on Broadway and Vegas, television. You know, I never sang any of my hits. I did over 2,000 shows in Vegas, and I never sang any of my hits. So when I went back out and came over and I recorded, made a new album, and they were still incredibly supportive. And
what is it about the relationship between you and your fans? It's probably one of the most special relationships between performers. And
It is pretty special. I think a lot of it has to do with the time in which you become successful. In my case, it was a lot of fans that were teenagers or younger. And, you know, during the whole 1970s and being able to have that kind of incredibly positive impact on people. And I think I know for my own self, I'm going to come back and tour I'm not going to say it's the last time, but given the history, I'm not sure I'm going to come back. I love this country.
You've got form.
I do. We have a little history to reflect upon. But on November 9th, I come over and I start in Birmingham and I can do the plugging.
And you're not coming on this show doing your own plugging. How dare you? I will plug this for you.
Please.
David Cassidy is coming in.
Yes.
The reason why we are honored with his presence today is because the Once in a Lifetime tour.
Indeed it
2012.
Might be the last in a lifetime as well.
Who knows?
Who knows?
It's a great lineup. You're going to be performing with some of the biggest names in the 70s.
And great artists too. I mean, I got to tell you, Leo Sayers. I met Leo once, but his work has always been, as a singer, he's incredible, and his writing is amazing. We've had some mutual writing partners and producers over the years, and I've just always loved his work. And who could ever not want to watch Hot Chocolate? I mean,
you sexy thing.
I believe in miracles, baby. You such a thing.
Come on. I could never do it, but that voice.
I love
was
that you've slightly gone into Robin Williams there from Good Morning Vietnam.
Sorry. Let's get serious now. Let's continue why we're here.
The 9th of November, you're in Birmingham. Saturday
First
the 10th
show.
Is Manchester. And then Sunday the 11th is Wembley.
Wembley, which for me was the first time I ever did a concert here in the UK. I understand from being here and talking to people, they're putting together a couple of specials because it was actually, this is my 40th anniversary since my first number one single. Solo, and here in the UK, and it was Could It Be Forever and Cherish, and it was my first multi-platinum album, solo album, all over the world too. So, it's pretty special. I love the people that I'm working with.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, there are lots of big stars on the tour, but back in the day, you know, did you ever get to hang out with any of these guys, or were you just too busy taking over the world and fending the chicks off, or were you in a bit of a bubble? How did it work? Did you hang out with other performers back then?
I had no time to hang out.
Exactly.
No, very little time. After I'd finished the last concert tour in 74 and had played all over the world and playing the stadiums and stuff, I started to get to have free time because I finished the Partridge Family and it it was a great time for me to work with some of my heroes and get to know, like, Brian Wilson and I hung out and worked together. Carl, his brother, who has always been one of my favorites. Sadly, Carl passed away, you know, over 10 years ago, but he's an amazing, amazing talent, as is Brian. And Brian's just gotten back with the Beach Boys for the first time, which is, that in itself is, I can't believe. But I worked with Lil George from Little Feat, who were, I thought was the best band I ever heard in my life, other than the Beatles.
And George Michael. George Michael was one of your backing singers.
Yeah,
how did that happen?
Let's not go that far. But I got to meet George because we had the same publisher, and he was a fan of mine, and I became a fan of his, and I invited him down to the studio one night while I was recording here, and I had just done the live vocal of Last Kiss, and he went, "Oh, man, can I?" I said, "Sure, would you?" And he came and sang harmony and background and edited some of the answers. Great talent. I mean, amazing singer, and he had that thing that I knew he was going to be very, very... He was still in Wham at the time. You know, I got to know my musical heroes were the Beatles, really. And like, you know, millions of other guys, I just bought an electric guitar, but I just kept playing and hanging out and then got into a lot of the blues and stuff. And most of it because of the British invasion, you know. I love the fact that I'm finishing my tour at the in Liverpool.
You're finishing your tour Saturday the 17th of November in Liverpool's Echo Arena.
I played Mickey and Blood Brothers on Broadway, and I came over and did, like, because I wanted to do it in the West End. I'd only been in the West End once.
Only about the West End, David, let's be clear.
Oh, Lord.
Darling.
How long are you planning on sitting in that seat? Can I ask you that question?
This is my last day.
Yeah, I would think so. Anyway, I'll be here tomorrow on the Steve Wright Show. This is David Cassidy. You're listening to BBC Two. Sorry.
I think this is good. David can do the rest of the show.
Yes, of course he can. He'd love to do the rest of the show. Unfortunately, David, we're not going to be able to speak with you much longer.
I tell you what we're going to do.
Yeah,
if you would like to introduce the next record.
I'd love to.
What's the next record?
This is BBC Radio 2 on the Steve Wright Show. And this next genius track is David Cassidy. That's me.
Could it be forever? Or is my mind just rambling on? I touched you once. Kissed you once, now I feel like you're mine. Well, I feel like you're mine, and seeing your face, I'm not wrong to have these feelings. Well, I feel like you're mine, I've never known a time before that's had so many meanings. Could it be forever, or am I just a waste of time? Well, I don't think so, 'cause you let me know you make me feel like you're mine.
That was the great David Cassidy introducing the great David Cassidy.
No, he's really not that great. But, you know, he's all right for an old lad. I have to say, I do love to sing and play and write. And
that's something I wanted to ask you. Do you get more of a kick out of the live stuff these days because it's less about the bun fight and it's more about the music and you can actually hear yourself at the gigs?
Yes. I mean, to be honest with you, it's been for me, playing live now, it's kind of because I didn't play my own hits, as I mentioned. I was on Broadway, and then I went directly into Vegas.
How long were you in Vegas for?
6 years plus, and I did over 2,000 shows. I produced a couple of shows, rewrote, and I wrote and created a show with my good friend Don Rio, great writer, called The Rat Pack Is Back. And I had at one point almost 90 employees, and I was doing 10 shows a week. I created and executive produced a television series at the same time, two movies of the week, and it got to be like, you know, a drug.
What's it like to be a resident in Vegas? Because I generally find when I go to Vegas, I'm in trouble once I've seen two sunsets.
It's not what you would think, because visitors come there and they think you live on the Strip. They think you live in the hotels and go ding, 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 boo. No. What I would do is I lived in a very, very nice, kind of normal, beautiful, very private area, about 15 minutes from the Strip. I'd drive in the back. I never went into the hotel. Rarely would I go into the hotel. At the MGM for almost 3 years, 2.5 years, doing AFX. And I would go in. I'd be there at 6 o'clock. I'd get out of there about 1:32. And, you know, you have to prepare, but it's 10 shows. Anyway, I was making so much money, I had to continue to work. So I did, and by the time I really turned around, it was 5 years and change, and I finally said, you know, I'm missing a whole part of my son's life, who was, and my wife, and she and I were like, I would see her for an hour a day. It got to a point where there was no balance.
Is that why we've only got sort of 7 dates on this tour? Is it because you kind of are more in charge? You're able to manage your life?
I will not tour anymore. This is the closest thing to a tour. The once-in-a-lifetime tour with Leo and Hot Chalk and Smokey. I promised them I wouldn't leave for more than 2 weeks, ever.
That's a good rule.
It's a great rule, and I stick to it. And, you know, I really don't have any plans to leave the United States again and tour anywhere.
And is that also because you have to look after the horses? Someone has to look after the horses, David.
I don't look after them. I pay for everybody looking after them.
I had this beautiful picture of you showing these.
Sure you did. Yeah.
I did.
You had me going in and cleaning, mucking stalls. Is that it?
No, I had you as the squire of the stables, possibly in some type of Harris tweed.
Yeah, I love that.
Wandering around. Instructing
Harris tweed.
Small men to do stuff.
No, very tiny men. That's why I got into it. The only profession I can think of were people who are a lot smaller than me.
I owned a horse.
Did you?
I owned a horse called Mary Delaney.
And Mary Delaney.
I was lucky enough that Mary Delaney went to Kentucky.
Wow.
And
you're kidding.
No, I'm not. And she won a race.
In Kentucky?
In Kentucky.
Was it at Keeneland?
It was at Keeneland.
You're lying.
No, I'm not.
That's big time. But the thrill of watching your horse race.
It was one of the greatest days, I have to say.
I can imagine.
At Keeneland.
Can I imagine? Yes, I can. For me, it was next to the birth of my son, next to seeing him develop into the person he is, my kids, my daughter's doing great.
I got to talk to you about your daughter because she's doing incredibly.
Yeah, she's doing well. She's doing a movie now. She's been in
Gossip Girl, done lots of movies.
Yeah, she was in a number of television series over the last 5 or 6 years. She was in Taken with, she was the first girl to be in the movie Taken a couple of years ago.
So what's it like to actually see one of your kids go through and head off on this journey of fame and recognition that you've been through?
It's scary, to be honest with you. It's really, I have great trepidation because it's a dreadful career. 98-point-something% of the Screen Actors Guild are living underneath the poverty line. 90-some make no money.
They're waiting tables in
LA. At all. Mm. Exactly. They don't work at all. And like 1% make a good living, and about 0.01% are filthy rich. But to be in the top 1% and actually be able to make a living as an actor.
Which she is.
And she's done very, very well. And she's done it on her own. She's a very good actress. And I'm very proud of her. My son is at Boston University. He got in as an actor. He got into NYU, into Michigan, all of them. And he had to audition as an actor. But he's a fantastic musician. And I'm really proud of him. More because, he's very talented. He's amazing. His band members are all at Berklee School of Music, and they're prodigies. And where John Mayer went to school, and the, you know, I mean, a lot of the great musicians, American musicians, come out of Berkeley. To get in there is pretty special. And he's a very talented guy, but more than that, as a dad, he's just, truthfully, he's the best person I've ever known.
The Once in a Lifetime tour, it kicks off on Friday the 9th of November in Birmingham. It runs right the way through to Saturday the 17th of November in Liverpool Echo Arena. Other venues are Manchester, London, Newcastle, Cardiff and Sheffield. I wish you all the best.
I do wish you all the best, and I wish Steve all the best.
It's a pleasure.
It's really a pleasure. Thank you all.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Patrick.